All right, welcome back to the Daily American. This is Dan the Man. We're back here. We got a special guest here today. We got my old squad leader from my first and only active duty station, Sergeant Terrell Gonzalez. Sergeant Gonzalez, welcome.
Well, thanks, Seth. How you doing, man?
Good, good. So let's start this off. It's been about this is a cool thing about, you know, the military is that we haven't spoken in a little while, but your ability to you know,
pick it up where you left off.
Yeah, exactly. And pick up exactly where we left off. And it's pretty spectacular. I mean, there's not many other affiliations where you go years without talking to people, but yet it's like it was like the first day I met you when I arrived at Fort Bliss, and Sergeant Gonzalez was there to greet me and basically smoke the dog piss out of me. But that's how it works. And, you know, I was just a little piece of shit private that thought he knew something as a young kid out of high school. And realistically, I didn't know shit, but I had some good leaders like yourself there to get me on my way. And that brings us here today to another story of, you know, another proud American. And Sergeant Gonzalez, why don't you walk us through, you know, where you were born, maybe a little bit about your background, your heritage, your family, whatever you're willing to discuss.
All right. I don't even know where to start with mine. I was born in Colorado, in Denver. It was a single mom, I guess, but she lost her parental rights when I was about three. She was real big into drugs and dumb shit. So the state came and took me away. Took me and I have five other brothers and sisters. They took us all away. She ended up officially, like, she fought it for a little bit, but she officially lost her parental rights when I turned seven or so. And they stuck me in this orphanage. They don't call it that anymore, but that's what it is. It's a freaking orphanage. But they stuck me in that, and I stayed there for a few years. And I think that's probably the place I learned the most about people in general. Like, you know, when you grow up with a whole family, even if those kids are big families, say you got 10, 12 people in your family,
sure,
it's nothing compared to growing up with 50 or 60 other shithead kids from all different backgrounds. And so, needless to say, I grew up fighting everybody, and I was really good at it. Like, I looked forward to it. But the bigger I got, of course, they stopped letting me fight with everybody. Nobody wanted to play.
Right, of course. Nobody wants to go against a guy that knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, I had some issues with it. There's adults there, of course, man. The staff members, they'd always try to, I don't know, if it wasn't bullying. They try to make me do what they want. All I ever wanted in the world was just to be left alone. Just leave me alone and I'll leave you alone and we're good, you know. But they kept trying to push their agenda on me, and I wasn't having it. So I of course, pushed back. And I lost quite a few times because they're, of course, twice my size, but they felt every ounce of it.
Yeah, but from a very young age, I mean, you're basically thrown, you know, I'm just commenting on your behalf on this one, because I didn't grow up on an orphanage. I know my father did, and I know it definitely took a big toll on his life. And, you know, it's just, I had no idea about that. Like I said, this is all non-scripted, and for us to have this conversation about some things that I had no idea about you, because, you know,
yeah,
first of all, when I arrived at our unit, you know, you've already been on, you know, deployments. You already know your shit. I just basically got to shut my mouth and do what I'm told. And you're not gonna confide in somebody who's brand new, or maybe even your peers, or those, you know, that you were close with in the military.
I never told anybody. I don't talk to anybody about anything from my past, because if they weren't there, it's none of their fucking business.
Yeah, I appreciate you being willing to do this. So you're basically thrown to the wolves in this orphanage. You're fighting on a regular basis.
That wasn't a big deal. Like, I was actually really good at it. So it became fun for me after a while. Like, I almost looked forward to a fight. Like, every once in a while, they try to get ballsy and get 3 or 4 guys together. And that was just made me that much better. Now, you got me a few times, but you're going to pay for it later on. You got to sleep sometime. And I know where you sleep, you know. So good luck, all asshole.
Right. It still has to be some, you know, like, I don't know. Yeah, it's got to be. As much as you enjoyed the fighting and everything at such a young age, it prone you to being the soldier you were. And we'll get into that, but
yeah. You know, so that wasn't even the hard part. Like, everything, I think my asset was, I looked at the world differently. Almost every single person that I know from those orphanages still that I grew up with, they're either in prison or they got killed already. Every single one of them. I think there's one that's not, but she ended up with like stage 4 cancer and she's about to die. But everybody else is just gone. Like, one of my best buds that I grew up with, he ended up with a life sentence for trying to kill his whole family. He turned 18. They came for him. He stayed with them for about 2 weeks and they tried to kill him. So they put his ass in jail.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It seems like people coming out of orphanages, you know, obviously they have, you had nothing to do with your circumstances being in there. And I'm sure a lot of these orphans are the same way. Like, my father, he was just born and then given straight to an orphanage in Italy as soon as he was born, and grew up there only until 9. And then he was adopted over here. But that's a whole nother story. The bottom line is you didn't put yourself in the orphanage. Circumstances did. And I'm sure a lot of people, you know, they grow up and they're troubled by that, and they turn to other outlets and they find themselves like you just mentioned, in prisons and in places that, you know, you essentially don't want to be in. But it seemed like you found a way to channel that into something else. So I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Kind of, man. It was more of I'm rebellious by nature. Like, you don't get to tell me what's going to happen. Like, go fuck yourself, man. They would always tell me that because I was so violent, or because I didn't listen to instruction and do as I was told, that I was going to end up in jail or dead by the time I was 18. Or when I made it to 18, they were like, well, by the time you're 20, you'll die. And by the time you're 25, and they just kept going. I was like, you guys are all fucking stupid. I'm not dying. And if I do, I took the world down with me.
Yeah.
So it was because I was so rebellious. I refused to let somebody tell me what I couldn't do. You know, but I was still a little boy when this all started. And the staff, like, they, once they realized that I was going to hit them back, every time they smacked me with a stick or something, I'd go find a bigger stick and smack them back. They started finding other ways to try to jab at me instead of hitting me, because they didn't want to get hit back. So they started trying that mental game. And they of course tried to diagnose me with a million different things. There's nothing wrong with me, man. I'm just a normal guy. I'm not somebody's patsy, you know. But they started saying that the only reason why I'm in there is because my mom didn't want me. And I was like, all right, that's cool. Like, I didn't want her either, but I didn't remember. Like, I don't know what was going on. I couldn't remember anything from my childhood. Even if it was a few years before then, I still couldn't remember shit. Like, I remembered I had a mom, but I don't remember losing her. Like, I don't, either way, the more they told me I could never have a family, nobody's ever going to call me brother or sister or dad or mom. Or I was like, you guys are all stupid. I'm going to do everything you're saying to make you look like a bitch. So my whole goal in life was to become the best dad I could possibly imagine. I've been thinking about it since I was 8 years old, about how to be the best dad. And all I did was look at everything else that somebody else did that was wrong as shit. And I said, that's what I'm never going to do. Like, you guys are assholes. Like, and I wouldn't tell anybody. I would just keep to myself and just like, yeah, that's exactly how you don't do it. And then I made it kind of like a life mission to track down my biological family. Because I when I went to the orphanage, I had nobody. I had a brother that ended up going there, but nobody knew that we were really brothers. They thought that we were some distant cousins or something, because we all have different dads. So we don't look alike.
Gotcha. How long were you in there until you were 18?
No, that one was only until 12. And then they moved me to a mental hospital, actually. my science teacher, I had earned a right to go to a public school for a change, because the school that the orphanage had, like, I was actually really smart. Like, I didn't sit there and listen to what you say, but I was actually really smart. They couldn't teach me at the orphanage anymore, so they allowed me to go to public schools as long as I was in specific classes. Well, my science teacher had us doing some solar system project. I loved science, you know, so he ended up letting me take this box, this teeny tiny, like, pencil sized box cutter back to work on some paper mache project. And that orphanage said I got it and I was trying to kill somebody. And I was like, you guys are fucking ridiculous. Like, you saw me burying it in a hole. And that meant I was killing you.
Right.
So I was like, all right, whatever. So they arrested me, of course. They stuck me in an orphanage, or the cops transferred me from the orphanage to a state mental hospital, like up in Denver. And then, I mean, I stayed there for like another year while they told me all the same shit that I'd heard growing up. They're like, yeah. But I mean, I wasn't mental, you know, so there's only so long they can keep you there if there's nothing wrong with you. So they eventually, and this is with this whole child custody thing, man, this is all it's a funding issue. Like, all these different companies that make millions off of kids, it's not because the kids actually have issues. It's because they can get certain doctors to say, yeah, well, this kid seems like he has ADHD, so you get special funding for kids with ADHD. Or this kid has antisocial tendencies, so you get extra funding because he has a mental disorder. You know what I mean? Like, so they try to re-diagnose you all the way throughout your childhood till you hit 18, and then they're like, oh, you're fine. Just get the fuck out of here. Well, but I saw it coming. Like, I knew what they were doing, because everybody I talked to tried to diagnose me with something else. I was like, dude, you guys are all stupid. Like, I've learned more about your freaking psychological crap than you will ever know just by watching you.
Right. So, it's essentially all about the money.
It is. It's always about the money. These poor kids are stuck in the system. So when I turned 18, I was like, you know, I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to get into this this foster system, and I'm going to find a way to raise as many of these kids myself without your bullshit as I can, so they don't have to grow up like you guys. That was my original goal when I first got out of the system, is to get back into it, but as one of the staff members. Like, I can show them how to do it, but do it right. Like, somebody that would stand up for the kids in the system. Of course, that never worked. They said that because they said I was, I don't know what they diagnosed me with when I was young, something. They called me paranoid schizophrenic or some shit like that one time when I was like 8 or something. They said because that diagnosis was there and then I couldn't work in the industry, it's like, you guys are stupid. I'm obviously not paranoid. Well, I mean, I'm paranoid, but mostly because you earned it. Like, I don't trust you. That doesn't make me paranoid.
Right. Completely different. But yeah, they'll just throw titles at you, misdiagnose you.
Yeah. Then, I kept on trying to find ways to give back. Like, that's half the reason why I joined the military, because I figured that they raised me, even though it was against my will, from the time I was 7 to the time I was 18. I figured I at least owed the country something back. I didn't want to grow up and have the whole world saying that I owed the country because I did this, this, and this.
So actually, you kind of felt like you owed them something. Even if these orphanages and institutions that you were in since a young age really didn't do much good for you at the end of the day, but you still felt like you had to give back one way or another.
Yeah, but it wasn't the orphanages that I felt like I had to get back to. I mean, they were all taxpayer funded. So I grew up being like the ultimate patriot. Like, I loved everything about the country. I studied everything about the Constitution and the way it was written and all the founders. I felt like I had to give back to the society that raised me. So if everybody in the whole state had been paying into my upbringing for 10, 11 years, 12 years, I figured I owed them back at least something. So I figured the best way to give back, join the military, they can take what they want. And I had a secondary reason for the military too, but that was my primary reason, because I had to give something back. That way, whenever I finally get done, they can't say, well, you still owe them. I wouldn't feel obligated to anybody, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. How old were you when you joined the military?
I think I shit, man, I don't know, 20, 21.
Okay.
I'd gotten out and worked a few jobs because I was trying to find other ways. Remember, I tried to figure out how to get into the system, to the child rearing system. After I got done, so I spent a few years trying to figure out what steps I got to take. And I just picked up whatever, like construction jobs. And this is under the like Clinton base realignment. So they had a whole bunch of bases that got shut down and turned into strip malls. So I got a construction job with them. And then I worked offshore on the oil rigs in Louisiana for a while.
And then, interesting. All things I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, I went to Louisiana because, that's a whole nother story. I had an apartment in Colorado. Like, I was already 18. I'd gotten out. I was like, I'm not talking to anybody from my past. You guys are all stupid. We're going to start over at the freaking bottom. Worked at some shitbag car wash. I had some roommate when we were going half and half on an apartment. And just some dinky little hole-in-the-wall apartment.
Sure, yeah.
And then some of my neighbors, I guess, got stranded here from Louisiana. They were baited out here for some false pretense. I don't know what their whole story was. I don't remember. It's a long time ago. But I was like, man, I don't have anything going on here. Everything here kind of sucks. I'm stagnant. So why don't I help you figure out how to get a ride and I'll pay for some gas. Well, I'll go down Louisiana and I'll start over from scratch there. So I scrounged together all the money I could and sold anything I had that was worth anything. I had a buddy that gave us a ride down there. We pretty much just gave him all the money for gas. I saved a little bit to eat, you know. We got down to Louisiana. We were supposed to stay with my buddy's his step aunt or I don't know, some relative down there. But because I don't look white, no, I'm not white. As soon as we showed up, they said he can't stay here. I don't care where he's got to go, but he can't be here. I was like, all right, you guys are assholes. So I just went all the way across the country to help them and their whole family get back home. And first day, within the first 20 minutes, I was homeless.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it sucked. And then I tried to figure out how to find a job. In Louisiana, there's not a whole bunch of jobs back then. So I found a job cutting lawns. It paid all right, but I couldn't find an apartment because, you know, I guess I wasn't one of the good old boys. Like, nobody wanted to rent to me because my last name was Gonzalez, I assume. Like, as soon as I wrote my information out, they would say, no, we're full, or we're not taking applications, or I don't know. I had the money to pay for an apartment. They just didn't want me there. So the good thing about Louisiana is they had a whole bunch of abandoned houses back then. I mean, usually they were just like run down plantation or shacks, but at least they someone had a roof. So I had a place to stay for a little bit. Then I got tired of doing that. So that's when I worked on the oil rigs, because they give you an actual place to stay when you're offshore in the Gulf.
Okay.
So I just had to figure out where to stay for those 2 weeks I came back. And then Louisiana was a big party time, kind of. So after I figured out my housing situation for the most part, after we come back to shore from our rotations, I spent the whole time high and drunk on anything I can get.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, you're 20, around 20, 21 on your own, like you've been Louisiana, your whole life in Louisiana. Like, yeah, what do you think you're going to do?
Yeah. So, I mean, but it started getting bad, like really bad. And it was to the point where I could pretty much not stop it anymore. And, I skipped one of my rotations, and this guy from the Salvation Army told me that they had a rehab place. He'd let me go into for a little bit until I could straighten out. So I went there, and then everything worked out fine, I guess. I mean, I got off of everything. I stayed clean as shit pretty much forever. I still like to drink now. In fact, I'm thinking about having a drink now. Huh. But I haven't gone back and done any drugs ever since then. I just, that was a pretty dark hole that I went down real freaking fast. And then I joined the Army. And it's funny because I did a delayed entry program. So even after I had joined, I was still homeless for a little bit. But I was walking across, you know, the median, like you have a highway on either side. There's that little grassy area in the middle.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
This fucking Louisiana state trooper pulled me over. and arrested me. He searched me, of course, and said I had an illegal concealed weapon, which it was a buck knife, like one of those old like brass ends, wooden buck knives.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah, that was the big bad weapon that he caught me with. And I was like, you got to be shitting me. Like, what am I being arrested for? Why are you even messing with me? Like, well, because you're trespassing. I was like, it's a freaking median, man. Like, I'm literally walking across the street. Like I said, it's trespassing because this is private property. It's owned by people on either side. I was like, all right, well, whatever. So we took it to court. The judge, of course, threw it out. But he said, I'm making nothing but bad decisions in my life. You got to do something with your life. And even though I had already joined, the judge like, well, you better join the army or go to jail. I was like, well, I can't go to jail because I didn't do anything wrong. Then he tried to get me for contempt. But my recruiter actually showed up, Sergeant Slaughter, and said, he's already signed up. He's already joined the army. We're going to ship him out already. So they put me in a hotel and I left already.
And then wow. That's funny. I had a similar situation. I was like 18, 19 hammered. And I thought I was like a tough guy and had like some like pocket knife in my, and I like pulled it out on somebody at like a movie theater or something and got arrested for it. And the judge, it's funny. The judge is still, he's actually running for re-election in my hometown. I guess my dad was there with me and somehow I ended up going in the military instead of getting hit. I mean, I don't know if I was going to be facing jail time or not, but he definitely cut me a break. And it's funny. We do have stuff in common.
Yeah, but I never actually pulled the knife out. It was still in my pocket. He did that while he was searching me. And I wasn't even breaking the law. I was literally walking across the street.
Yeah, because if you would have pulled the knife out, you would have killed somebody. I was just talking shit.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot more stupid stuff that went on in between all this stuff. I don't know. I don't know how much I should say. I don't want to get arrested for something later on.
Yeah, I understand. I got you.
Yeah. Let's see. Joined the army. I scored high enough on my ASVAB to do anything I wanted to in the army. But I was a fighter. Like, I liked fighting. Like, it just seemed natural to me. So one of the other big decisions that or biggest reasons why I decided to go to the army is because that recruiter told me that's the one place you can go where it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or black or white or whatever the hell you were. Everybody starts over as just a dumbass green idiot.
Yep.
And I'm like, dude, I would love to do that. Like, let's start off from scratch. I don't care if I'm standing next to a homeless kid versus a senator's son. Measure us the same way and find out what I'm actually worth. Like, that's all I ever asked to just balance the scales. So I was excited to go. Of course, once I get to the army, I find out that's a crock of shit.
Right.
And it's all clicky. And I mean, it's true a little bit, but not like he was making a sound. So, but it was enough to get me in there. And let's see. Shit, I don't know. I don't know how much to say about the deployments.
What year did you join the military? The army.
I joined in January 2001. So technically it was 2000, I think. But I had that delayed entry deal.
Yeah.
So it was late. And then it was way before the war. We were actually doing the EIB testing when September 11th happened.
Just for those listening, the EIB is the expert infantry badge. So it's going to take all your infantrymen and basically test them out and separate, you know, the best infantry guys from you know, the rest.
Yeah. I was a PFC and I was going out for it. I didn't think I would make it, but I'd study the shit out of it. They gave me a handful of books, said, you learn these, you're going to know everything you need to know to be a grunt. Everything else past that is just physical. So I studied the crap out of those books, even though nobody thought I was. I'd still go out and drink, still go out and party, you know. I was still a stupid kid. I was stationed in Germany. So the German chicks were, they were fun back then.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and then we're doing the EIB. I was true blue the whole way. Like, I was just stoked as can be. We do the 12-mile road march I think it was the standard was 35 or 45-pound bag. Well, this freaking jackass came over here like right at the beginning of the road march and started talking shit to me. This is a captain. I wasn't going to talk shit back, but yeah, sir. He was like, that's a nice light ruck here. And so I'm getting a little feisty. Like, dude, fuck you and your light ruck. I picked up his. This guy's got a freaking brick in there. So, of course, I had to beat him. And by the time it was over, I had about 75, 80 pounds of my ruck. And him and I are running this 12-mile road march. And then I think it's just because he and I got competitive with each other is the only reason why we actually finished. Because right as I came across the line, we had the German soldiers coming up to us. We had all the cadre that were still kind of grading the EIB. They were pulling out real weapons. We're like, what the fuck is this? This isn't bullshit. You can't bring live ammo to a training ground. They're like, no, you guys have to stop. And they turned the TV on for us. And me and this captain are just sitting there with this just blank look on our face. Like, this can't be real. Like, you guys got to be fucking with us. Like, this is old footage or something. Or we didn't know what to do. So needless to say, September 11th happened. And then everything changed. Like, I mean, absolutely everything. We all knew we were going to that. Captain ended up going off on to SF. And last I heard, he was recruited by Delta, but I never heard from him again. So I'm assuming that's true.
Okay.
And me, I, of course, just stayed with the infantry because I liked it. And we were already scheduled to deploy to the Balkans, to Kosovo, when it first happened. So when it first happened, we just went all around Europe, getting every American we could find back to the nearest base. We didn't know in the beginning. I don't know if any of you guys remember it. There was so much confusion about what the hell was happening. Like, nobody could believe somebody had the balls to attack the U.S. on American soil. So I think we were all still in disbelief, but we, of course, followed orders, got all the Americans round up. They're building up their coalition. We deployed to Kosovo for a few months, which is a fun deployment. Got our mind off a bunch of shit. And then we came back. We trained up for a little bit. We re-outfitted all of our stuff, and we deployed into Iraq.
And what year was that, Sergeant Gonzalez?
Shit, I think it was 2003.
And what major cities was the, you guys were the big red one, right?
Yeah. So I get some of my deployments confused.
Sure. Yeah, I can imagine. One.
When we first started, the very first time, like, I know, like, when you came in and you were deploying, we would fly in to wherever we're going, or we'd go to like Anaconda or something like that, and then disperse from there. When we first went and we had to drive into country, like, we would set up these long freaking million mile road marches where everybody's driving these vehicles at 35 miles an hour from northern Kuwait all the way into Iraq to whatever base they're going to be at.
Okay.
We set up on Camp Warhorse, and I don't even remember the city that was close to it anymore, but we set up initially on Warhorse, and we spread out to a few bases around there. Us being us, we ended up with a base called FOB Normandy. And actually, like, the base, it was one of Saddam's old bases.
Okay.
That we commandeered, I guess.
And that was the first deployment out of how many did you do total?
Four.
So four deployments. Were they all to Iraq or Afghanistan as well?
No, all I never Iraq. Got to Afghanistan, yes.
So essentially, time I
was gone, Afghanistan was nothing. Honestly, Afghanistan was pretty low-key most of the time, except for a handful of skirmishes. But a lot of the major fighting was pretty much done by the time I hung up my boots.
Wow. It sounds like, so Sergeant Gonzalez, it sounds like, you know, I'm not going to ask you to dive into any details of your four deployments. Obviously, that's four deployments is enough for one deployment is enough for anybody. Four is remarkable, especially as an infantryman. But it sounds like your whole life, you may not look at it this way, but it seems like your entire life. Obviously, I know you were in the shit when it came to war. And then, you know, growing up, your childhood, it just seems like your life's just been like, at least until you got out of the military, just like a lot of trauma. But you know, you may not look at it like that. But your story is certainly remarkable. I mean, from the very, very beginning, you know, fighting, and then the orphanage you grew up in. I mean, it's just like, it just seems like a difficult, you're definitely a special breed and built differently.
But Dan, if you look at the way I see it, I grew up, I mean, it sucked having to grow up fighting all the time, but it didn't bother me. I got good at it, and then I liked it, and it all prepared me for my young adulthood, where I'd be fighting all the fucking time too. So it was just like the pre-training for the pre-training. Like, it all seems to prepare me for something that whatever's coming next. And everything that's ever happened in my life, I mean, you may not see it now, it may seem like it sucks ass right at the moment, but if you look at a bigger picture of your life, it shit you learned 10 years ago may come in really handy right now. Like when you first joined, Dan, I remember you showing up, man. You were a mildly little shit. I loved it about you. I loved that you didn't back down. But I also needed you to understand that sometimes you got to shut the fuck up and do what you're told. Like, yeah, just absolutely. Sometimes. But I like that you challenged us. Like, I mean, I don't want anybody ever get stagnant. But at the same time, even you nowadays, you realize, like, man, back then I was right out of high school. I thought I knew everything there was to know. Little did I know. You know, like, you can look back now and say, shit, I didn't know half what I think I knew back then. And then I guarantee in 10 years from now, you'll look back on today and say, man, I wish I knew this back then. You know, so I think our whole lives kind of prepare us for whatever's to come next. And mine has been just another example of get ready for some more bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, your story is definitely, it's definitely powerful. It's gripping. I definitely was a know-it-all little piece of shit private when I first went in. I mean, even sometimes today I need to check my ego and check myself and, you know, realize that you know, there's always somebody out there that's had a tougher road than you. There's always somebody out there that, you know, I'm not the best at realistically anything. And I think I need to, you know, check myself in that regard sometimes. As far as you, Sergeant Gonzalez, so now you have, how many children do you have?
All right. So this is going to kind of get me in trouble if the wrong people hear it, but I have two boys.
Okay.
I have a girl too. So remember how I told you how I grew up?
Yeah.
And this is one of those things I'm not sure I should say. Well, I got one of my foster parents pregnant. Okay. And she had a daughter.
That's a story on it. That's a story.
Yeah, that's a whole nother one. Like, I don't want to give too many details, but yeah, that was another, damn it. So she ended up raising her here in Florida. And I don't really talk to her. I see her here and there. She's got that young mentality you had when you first showed up.
Yeah, sure.
That real cocky, I know everything there is to know kind of mentality. Yeah. So I'm just kind of giving her distance, letting her learn what she doesn't know.
Yeah, but she's older now. How old is she now?
She's 21, 22.
Okay.
23. I'm fucking out.
Just at that age where we know it all.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll let her have her day. I mean, she'll eventually wake up and realize how much she doesn't know. And then maybe she'll start listening to people around her. But until then, it doesn't really hurt me to let her go. So, I mean, you asked me how many kids I got. I got three, technically, but I'm only actually raising two. Like, I've only had any influence on these two boys. Gotcha. They're freaking awesome. I can't wait till you meet them, man. I mean, they're pretty awesome. I don't know if you remember Josh Carter.
I don't. I think was before my time. Yeah.
Son of a bitch. Well, that was probably one of the most devastating things that happened to me during the military, at least mentally. My oldest son's name is Josh Carter Gonzalez.
I think I remember you. How old is your son?
He's 12 now.
That's it. Yeah. So that lines up perfectly. Yeah. I think I remember. I think I do remember you telling me that that's what you were going to name him.
Yeah. Well, Josh got me the worst because I've never lost anybody in combat. And direct fighting, I was a little different. I wanted my guys to be freaking stupidly violent. Like, stop questioning things. Stop trying to be politically correct. Fire your freaking gun and we'll figure out shit later on. And every once in a while, you'd have somebody's kind of real passive and you send them back to base and say, you're going to do gate guard or chow hall detail or something like that. And you want the actual shooters outside the wire with you, you know? So Josh was probably one of the greatest shooters I've ever had. Like, he was a tiny ass little dude. There was nothing physically remarkable about him, but he's just one of those little bitty guys that had more fight in them than anybody you've ever met in your life. Like, you can tell he was that. I don't care if you're 12 feet tall and 5,000 pounds, I'm still going to sock you in your head.
Right.
Kind of guys. I'm like, he was just, but it messed me up the most because I got him back from that deployment and he left pretty shortly after that deployment. And then he re-enlisted to go to the base that I originally came from in Germany. Because, I mean, I'm assuming he liked something about the way I came up. He didn't realize that it was probably a little more childhood than my first duty station, but he wanted, I guess, to follow in my footsteps. He was a really great kid, man. The last thing I said to him right before he drove off, his freaking car's packed. I watched him leaving. I was like, well, I promised you I'd get you back. I got you back. You're not my fucking problem. Don't do anything stupid. And then 2 days later, his dad calls me and tells me that he shot himself. I mean, it wasn't a suicide. It's hard to explain. Josh is one of those, if you challenge him or you dare him, he's going to do it. And he wouldn't flinch. He wouldn't back down to anybody, anytime, anywhere. So he was fucking around with his new gun that he got. And one of his friends, he was at a party with, of all things, playing around with it. One of his friends loaded it and said, I dare you to shoot yourself. And of course, Josh, not being afraid of shit, said, I ain't scared of shit. So put it up to his head, pull the trigger. And I don't think I've been able to let myself go with that one, because the fucking last words I said to him was, you're not my problem anymore. And I fucking regret that big time. But nothing I can do to change it.
No, I don't think there's anything you could have done, Sergeant Gonzalez. You did your job. You got him back. You got him back from the box in one piece.
He's wild, like wild. So, I mean, there's not a lot you can do when somebody's that crazy. But I don't know. Like, the gun he went and got, the pistol he went and picked up, was the exact same one that I spent my entire deployment researching. Because I wanted to get myself a, like, post-deployment present, you know. My old lady had spent all my money. Oh, yeah, I got married back then, too. Some German chick. Because you remember how I grew up, right? So,
yeah.
I figured, we're going to war. I'm not going to die alone. Like, I just, that someone somewhere in the world needs to remember I was there. So I picked some random German chick and we got married. I said, like, you get all your medical benefits, but when we're done, we're done.
The question is, sorry, because how many German kids do you have?
Well, No, I don't know. I don't think I have any. All right. For sure. But no, I mean, well, she wanted to stay married for some reason. Like, she followed me back to El Paso from Germany. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck you're doing here. Why don't we just do it? And then I found out that if I got a divorce in Germany, I'd have to pay her for the rest of her life. I was like, this is fucking bullshit. Like, I'm not doing that. So I was like, yeah. Let's go back to the US. We'll make this work. And apparently the dude she was screwing the entire deployment ended up getting stationed in Fort Bliss. And I heard her talking to him, like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. Once he passes out, he won't even know. We'll sneak out and do it in the car. I'm like, all right, well, once you get out to the car, just stay out there. Like, I mean, I went and got her a little plane ticket to get the hell out of here. And like, I just didn't care. Like, dude, just stop. Just go away. So I think I had to pay her like alimony for like 2-3 months. And then the divorce was finalized in a Texas court. I've never had to see her again.
Wow. So, dude, this is what I love about this. That's what I love about this podcast, Sergeant Gonzalez. And, you know, I really do appreciate you sitting down with me, because these authentic stories where, like, you know, we literally haven't spoken in over a decade, and I could just tell the authenticity coming from your voice. And, you know, most certainly your life's been, you know, besides the, obviously, the 4 deployments as an infantry guy, and especially in the initial invasion, and then, you know, your childhood, essentially not really I think childhood trauma or childhood abandonment goes, it's a lot different than when we're adults, because our brain's still developing. And, you know, it seems like your life's just been, like you said, it definitely has built you up to where you are and where you need to be. But it seems like, you know, it's been a pretty tough road. It's certainly something to be proud of where you are. You definitely have a wonderful family now. I appreciate you doing this interview and hope, you know, we stay in touch, and I look forward to meeting, Josh
Michael.
Yep.
Yo, before you hang up with me, let me tell you one more thing about the family before you kick off.
Sure.
I did the ancestry DNA test. Oh, first of all, I found every single person in my family for the last few thousand years.
Okay.
I'm able to trace my lineage back to the birth of nations. Like, it's way, way, way back there.
Wow.
I even found my biological dad, who my mom said, of course, didn't exist because she's an idiot. And he just happened to be the coolest freaking dude ever. He lived in Denver still. He married. He has another kid. He has a son here in Florida. So,
did you meet up with him and you went and met with him and hung out?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Absolutely. And we do Christmas and stuff here and there. Like, they're really good people.
That's phenomenal.
If my mom wasn't such a shitbag, she could have just told my dad that I existed. But he didn't remember her. Like, I'm pretty sure she was just a late drunk night booty call. Like, you know, women being women, just putting it out there. So, but my dad is cool as hell. And now when we talk, it's like we're never apart.
That's awesome.
All through that stupid DNA test.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't leave that part out.
Yeah.
That's like another crazy, that's a whole story in itself. I mean, it sounds like we could go on for hours due to time restraints. We're going to wrap this thing up, and Sergeant Gonzalez, I just want you to know that first and foremost, you know, as I know you do, the burden of Josh Carter, should not lie with you. You did your part. You brought him home safe. But rest in peace, Josh Carter. And I just want to let you know, Sergeant Gonzalez, the Daily American welcomes you back anytime.
Thank you, man. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Talk to you whenever you get some time, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Take it easy, guys.